It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on News Talk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
Welcome to the weekend. Each week I invite a Sandler keynote trainer to discuss strategies to improve behavior, attitude, and techniques using the proven Sandler methodology. This week my guest is Tom Neeson. Tom is the author of a new book that Sandler has put out called Call Centers, The Sandler Way. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Share with our listeners a little bit about your background, Tom. Where are you from? How did you get involved in Sandler? Tell us your story.
Well, 22 years ago, I was working as director of sales for Fujifilm and just realized I was tired of working for somebody else. And I had been through every type of training. Fuji was really good at spending a lot of money on training. We had, not spin selling, but we had probably four or five different types, Xerox selling system, the Activist selling system. And Sandler was one that we all took on and really enjoyed. And at that point, it was funny. I was in my head thinking, okay, I think I want to go do something else. And I saw an ad for Sandler. And I called them up and said, I'd like to buy Texas. And they laughed and said, well, first we got to meet. That's really how I got into Sandler.
To buy Texas, huh?
Yeah. They said, no, you got to come in and see it. You got to do a training session. We got to give you, what is it when you buy a franchise, so many days and what have you. Yeah. And I was ready to write a check. So that's basically how I got into it. I'd been one of those guys all my life that believed in training and spent a lot of money on my training myself. Funny, I thought all salespeople were like me. I found out something different.
Right. That's awesome. So what inspired you, Tom, to write the book, Call Centers, The Sandler Way?
Yeah, actually, one of my first accounts was a call center, a startup with four salespeople. Oh. And they were a client for 15 years.
Wow.
We took them from four salespeople to about 300 salespeople.
My gosh.
So through that, this was a young startup call center of only four people and grew to 300. So I learned a lot along the way about the difference between face-to-face, phone, and what you have to do to make it work or not. And while some of the principles are the same, it's really you're under a much bigger microscope and things happen much faster. The timeline's much faster. Now, the sale itself might be a 3-month sale.
Mm-hmm.
The things that happen must be measured and happen much quicker. So we really took the principles of BAT and really, squeezed it down and compressed it to how many calls we make today. What difference does that make? And since we weren't knocking on doors and going and making appointments, going and seeing people, you're calling people, you're making the next appointment, then you're making a demo appointment. It was really able for us to track everything. Well, because of that knowledge and the Sandler principles themselves, but just really compressing them, we started working with a lot of call centers and really making a huge difference in some of the call centers.
You know, call centers are such a vital part of today's business, yet most business owners say something along the lines of, oh, cold calling doesn't work, or we don't bother with that. So talk to us a little bit about what people are missing when they don't have a direct sales force who are dialing for dollars.
Well, I think, we'll hear that the cold calls don't work. And, it all depends on what you look at. Is cold calls a good use of your time? What's your good return on investment? Well, if you go have a guy that can go knock on doors, I was just talking to somebody, a company that we took on and changed and created a little call center, and they're always outside. And we took them on, and their thought was, calls don't work. And I said, okay, so how many people can you see in a day knocking on doors? And he said, 5. I said, great. How many calls do you think you can make in an hour? Just dial in the phone. He said, 25, 30. Out of the 5 that you see face-to-face, how many will give you an appointment? He goes, maybe 1. I said, okay, out of 25, 30 people you get on the phone, how many do you think you can get an appointment with? He said, well, probably no more than 1. I said, right. So I can get 1 in 1 hour, and it'll take you a whole day to get 1. So that's a big concept. That's part of it. Cold calling, people say, is dead. And I think, the old-fashioned cold calling, if you're calling off a list of people that just don't even know if you're buying your stuff, don't even know what they do, that's true cold calling. But in today's world, you don't need to do that. We got such technology, just unbelievable technology, that within a few seconds, I can actually type your name in or your company's name in. I know exactly how big you are. I know where you're located. I know how many employees you have. I know what you sell. I know your biggest seller. I know all that data. It doesn't take me 20 minutes to research. It takes me one click of a button, and I can have that on my screen, and I can make a phone call to you with a lot more knowledge than we ever used to have.
Right.
They call it warm phone now.
Right. No, I think that's a great point. And I think part of the reason people avoid it is it's just call reluctance. It's the programming that says, I don't like getting cold calls, so I don't want to make cold calls. How do you combat that self-limiting belief, Tom?
Well, I don't know that we ever will, because I got to be honest with you, I hate making cold calls. Never like them. Never will. I've been in sales all of my life. I cannot stand prospecting. I love sitting across from somebody in an appointment. I hate, dread every day prospecting. Yeah. But I also know I got to do it. I know make money in the long run.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're ever going to get away from, I do not like doing. In fact, I think if I found someone that loved doing cold calls, I'd be a little scared and probably run out of the building. Might go postal on me. But, you know, I think some of the things that I do is, this is how I want people to think about it, and this is how I think about it. Let's say I have a list of 1,000 people in my territory that buys my stuff. Now, let's just say 1,000. Out of the 1,000 list of people that buy my stuff, I would imagine, depending on your product and service and everything and competition, I would imagine out of 1,000, 25 of them are in trouble and need help and need to change something.
Yeah.
Maybe 35, maybe 50, but that's it. Out of 1,000, let's say 50, let's benefit it up. 50 people are in big pain and need your help. And the other 950 are doing okay the way things are. So if that's the case, then my whole concept when I sit down with that list is not to make an appointment with everyone. My concept is to scratch 10 people off my list today.
Yeah.
So my job is to call people and find out people that can't use my services. So I'm approaching it from a different angle of, I'm not looking for someone that can buy my stuff. I'm looking for the people that can't buy my stuff, so I don't waste my time with them.
Awesome.
If you have that mentality of, hey, I had 10 no's today, I had a great day. Because when I wake up in the morning, I have no idea if someone will say yes. But I do know people will tell me no.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make myself a successful day by how many no's I get, not how many yes's I get. And if I had 10 people say I can't use your service today, I had a great day. I eliminated 10 people off my list, got it down a little bit, had a great day.
Awesome. Tom Neeson is my guest. Tom, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you and have a conversation.
My email is tom@salesmadeeasy.com, and my phone number is 972-960-8695, extension 223.
I'm Idaho's Sandler trainer, Jim Stevens. Visit our website at www.crossroads.sandler.com and download the 3 biggest mistakes salespeople should never make. If you have a specific question or comment, you can call us at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. And welcome to one of my favorite parts of the program, which is Entrepreneur Radio. In this segment, we get to hear the stories of local entrepreneurs. They're the real heroes of our culture, I think, because these are people who are willing to take a risk, build a business. They know they're going to have to depend on hiring people to help them grow their business, and it really infuses energy and finances into our economy. I'm Jim Stevens with Sandler Training, and we've invited to be with us here today Scott Baker. Scott is the new owner of Scott
College Hunks Hauling Junk and College Hunks Moving.
Yeah, I knew I couldn't say that. So welcome to the program, Scott.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about you. You've been in business now, what, a month or two? Tell us about how'd you get into this business?
Well, we actually just moved to Boise here recently, and we were looking to do something a little bit different. We did come here from Southern Illinois, and we did purchase this franchise here in Boise. We're brand new to this town. The company is known nationwide, but not known well here at this point. So we did have a small log home sales company in Illinois, and we're just excited to get here, and it's an incredible brand, and just excited to get started here.
We're in Illinois.
So we were in the southern part, Carbondale, Illinois,
Carbondale.
Near St. Louis.
I was born in Bloomington.
Oh, cool.
And
cool.
Grew up in Springfield.
Okay.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very cool.
Great. Awesome.
Small world, right?
It is. It's a small world.
Yeah, I refer to myself as homegrown Illinois good.
Cool.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So what was the allure that said, let's go to Boise?
We were wanting to get out of the Midwest. We've been to the Northwest on vacation numerous times. And love the town, love the area, and then love the entire Northwest. So we're just looking to make a change. And, of course, my wife, Cheryl, and then my son, Austin. We're all excited just to get out here and kind of do something different. We love nature and just love the area. And
so
it's
you came here with no job.
Yeah.
And with the intention of building a business.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you bought a franchise. Wow, you are really either crazy or courageous.
We had several people think we were crazy.
Maybe a little bit of both. Huh?
Yeah. So we had several people ask us, do you have family there? Do you have friends there? And we said, no, we're going to make a change. We want to be out there. So
Austin, tell us from your perspective, are your folks nuts or is this a lot of fun?
I don't think they're nuts because I come from more of an entrepreneurial like mindset. For many years, I've wanted to own my own business. So I fully support them. And I think it's
That's actually awesome.
A smart idea to do.
Yeah, it really is. And Meridian, I was talking to Brad Little, who's the lieutenant governor, and he said that they expect this area to grow 40,000 people a year for the next next 20 years. So it's one of the fastest growing areas. Very smart to get in business. What inspired you, Scott, to buy a franchise?
We were just wanting to do something different, and we knew if we moved out here, it would be the best and easiest way to kind of get a business up and running. You know, if you start a business on your own, there's a lot of learning, things
right.
you need to learn.
Right.
And I started doing some research last August on some different companies, and this one just completely rose to the top as far as the company. It's an incredible company.
So how much were you involved, Austin, in the due diligence?
I was involved from the get-go, you know, every little aspect of the business. I've been along with them and learned throughout the process. So.
And how do you feel about it?
I'm really excited, and it's a really great experience to learn
right.
more about the business from,
right.
you know, its ground up beginnings.
That's very cool. And in Southern Illinois, you sold log homes, so you
right.
were you building them also, selling them at, or just selling?
So we would sell the log home package, and we had all of the subcontractors and contractors that would then build it. So we were involved throughout the entire process. And actually, we moved that company here also, River to River Log Homes. So that company, we just moved here, and then we'll restart that here too.
Once this is self-sustaining?
Exactly. So yeah, we're working on the College Hunks brand at this point, and then we'll...
So that Hunks is an acronym. What's that stand for?
Yeah, so the Hunks is actually an acronym. It stands for Honest, Uniformed, Nice, Knowledgeable Service.
And that's awesome.
Most of our guys are in college, young guys, incredible guys. One of our core values is building leaders. We actually have 7 Boise State football players that work for us, and they all do incredible work. They're learning a lot, and I can tell some of them will go on into business themselves and do very well
right,
in life.
That's awesome. Yeah, so you get to be a mentor and mm-hmm. help chart the course for them.
Right, right.
So what are some of the challenges that you're facing building a new business? I mean, you've got a lot going on because it's new area, new business.
Right. Yeah, so I'd say our biggest challenges, it's a new area, of course, and we're still kind of learning the area. Just getting set up, and of course, cash flow, like any new business. You
right.
know, the money's flying out the door like crazy. And we're building the business very, very quickly. But just the normal challenges most businesses face when you start, you're still learning some aspects of the business. So there's just a lot to learn. And then, of course, the normal cash flow issues
yeah,
you have when
yeah.
you start up also.
Well, I don't know that cash flow issues ever go away, so don't get
True.
Your heart set.
True, yeah.
One thing about being an entrepreneur or self-employed is you are going to have cash flow issues.
Sure.
Because
right.
your focus is on growing the business, which means you're not doing sales, so then you focus on sales, and it's this emotional roller coaster
right.
that we often go through.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about a family business. So, Austin, your mom's in the business, your dad's in the business, and are you a... What's your birth order? Only child?
I'm an only child.
Only
yeah.
child, oh. So are you really managing them? Is that how this works?
I give them some feedback in a sense.
That's awesome. So how's it working being a family business from your perspective, Austin?
Well, you have to separate the business from the family life, of
yeah.
course. You don't, you know, want to tear each other's hair out, so to speak.
Yeah, do you guys also, you're new in town. Do you live together?
Yeah, we do live together.
Oh, you live together, you work together.
Yep.
We're a family business here, so we know all about that. And some people say, I could never work with my spouse, parents, whatever. What's your thoughts?
I think it's possible. It's just a matter of recognizing that it is work and trying to remove the family aspect, you know, within the workplace.
So do you call it mom and dad at work, or do you go by their surnames?
Well, generally, if there's other employees involved, I just go by, you know, their first name, but I guess on a more personal basis.
It's mom and dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have that same dynamic here in our office, and it's a fine line. Part of the success in a family business is when the parents understand how much value their kids bring to the table and really respect them. So speak to us a little bit about that, Scott.
Well, I really can't believe how much Austin's really stepped up, and he's learned so much since we've opened. It's just been incredible. He's learned so much about business, you know, customer service, just all the different aspects of having a successful business. So Austin's just done incredible. And then my wife, Cheryl, when we started, I just can't believe how much she has learned, and just everything has worked so well.
That's awesome.
I really wasn't sure when we started, kind of, you know, we hadn't really worked together this closely before. We have with other things, but not this closely, and everything's just worked out so incredible. incredible.
I find in my family business, I don't think a day goes by when I'm not really impressed with how smart one of my kids are and how well they handle situations and circumstances. And I often think, you know, I'd like to take credit for that, but I don't think I'd get much credit.
Right. Yeah, I can't believe, too, how much we each come up with ideas for the business to make the business better every day. Things I wouldn't even think about,
yeah.
And they come up with different ideas to make things better either for the customer or for the business, just to continually improve on the business.
That's very cool. So if running a family business isn't always easy, how do you guys handle conflict?
We just talk about it. We're like any other family. We each have our own personality. I'm kind of a stronger personality, so sometimes I have to kind of dial it back.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of talking about it, apologizing sometimes when you mess up,
right.
You know, just trying to be good to each other and recognize, you know, what's going on.
How about you, Austin? How do you think it works?
Yeah, communication is definitely the number one aspect. You know, recognizing when you do something wrong, admitting to it, and being open-minded to different suggestions, because everyone has their own strengths and abilities, and you have to let them dial into that.
One of the challenges I find in family businesses and family dynamic is family, we're much more open with one another, far more so than you would be with employees.
Right.
So with an employee, you may sugarcoat what you're thinking, but with each other, it's probably comes right out, bark on. Your thoughts on that?
That's exactly true. I mean, I've been guilty, even with Austin, of being harder on him than other team members and expecting more from him. So I have to try to keep that in perspective. I've been completely guilty of that. So I'm improving on that, but I'll probably make a mistake in the future.
It's still a challenge.
So,
yeah. Austin?
Well, true feelings come out between the family members, and you really get a true idea of the situation instead of someone, keeping it in and then maybe talking about it amongst their friends or family later on. So all the real issues get addressed, between each other.
Wow, he is smart.
He's a very smart kid.
That's brilliant. So I think that is one of the great advantages of a family business is there's a lot more politics in corporations because there isn't that unvarnished feelings and thoughts and that willingness to engage in conflict. I like the quote that the doorway to intimacy is conflict, and it's conflict that draws us together. So healthy conflict. If it's unhealthy, it leads to separation, divorce, all of those things that destroy churches, families, and businesses. So if you engage in conflict in a healthy way, I think that really turns things around. So let's talk a little bit about the secret to success. So you had mentioned earlier, Scott, that you felt like hard work is a key component. Tell us about that.
You have to work hard in any business for it to succeed. I mean, that's part of the whole equation. So, I mean, we've been working very hard at this business to build the business. Cheryl and I were even on the truck someday out there in the field. I mean, you have to work hard. That's just part of any recipe for success, I believe.
Yeah, I've heard it said that the beauty of being your own boss, being an entrepreneur and a business owner, is you get to work your own hours, whatever 90 hours a week you want.
Right. Exactly. True. Exactly. Yes. Uh-huh.
How many hours a week are you guys working on average?
I'd say at least 80 or more most weeks.
Right.
I mean, we start early in the morning. Sometimes we don't finish till 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Do you think that's endemic of the business moving, or is that just because you're a startup?
I'd say both. We're starting up, so there's a lot of things we have to do in the office to kind of get things set up. But then, of course, some of our guys, we still have to kind of, be there in the field with some of them. So it's just a combination, I'd say.
We recently moved our home, and it was before we knew you guys. In fact, before you were in business, actually, here in town. But those movers were there until 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if I were them, I would have gone home and come back. But I guess they have a backlog of something the next day they have to do.
Yeah, I mean, any job we get on, we're going to finish that same day, even if it's till 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. I mean, we're going to finish it right then. So that's just part of the business.
So aren't you too old to be doing that?
Well, I hope not. So, yeah.
I don't think I could do that. That's a lot of hours. You're going to have to get more of these young guys.
We have plenty. So Austin does real good work, and all of our guys, all of our hunks, they do very good work.
Now, that hunks is an acronym. Tell us what that acronym stands for.
So the hunks actually stands for honest, uniformed, nice, knowledgeable service. And all of our hunks, of course, also live up to that name. We have bigger guys, stronger guys that can move stuff quickly, but yet still gently also.
Yeah, you said you have some folks who are BSU football. How many
exactly
from the football team?
So we have 7 Boise State football players that are hunks that work for us, and they're all great guys too.
So is that during the summer you've got their time? What do you do in the winter?
Well, in the fall and winter, then we do have other hunks that come in and work for us. Our busy season is, of course, more summer.
Spring
typically.
And summer, yeah.
So yeah, we'll have other hunks that'll work for us then at that point. Mm-hmm.
Scott's moved here just recently from Southern Illinois. Been here how long? 2-3 months?
Yeah.
So brand new to Boise, brand new business. Tell us about the brand. I think I own a franchise. Sandler's a franchise, and there's a tremendous amount of value that comes with the network of people. So talk to us about how this organization, this franchise came to be and what appealed to you about it.
Well, the College Hunks brand, College Hunks Hauling Junk and College Hunks Moving, actually started about 12 years ago. It was started by two college guys, Nick and Omar. They actually borrowed their mom's van once summer, went out, picked up some items, made a little bit of money, and they did enter a contest at their university in Florida and end up winning the contest for the business plan, won $10,000.
Wow.
Their families, though, pressured them to go and just get regular corporate jobs, so they went into corporate America for 6 months, hated it, and then just both of them on a whim just decided, let's start up College Hunks Hauling Junk and College Hunks Moving. Started up. They were on the first episode of Shark Tank.
Oh, really?
They pitched an idea on there, and it's gone from, you know, just those two guys to being over 100 franchisees around the country. So it's just taken off. The whole key is just that high level of customer service, taking care of customers. Yeah, I just started out with just two guys, two college guys with an old beat up white van. In fact, they kept the door to the van at the corporate headquarters just as a reminder.
That's
of
awesome.
Where they started at.
So how long ago was that? When was it founded?
So it was founded in 2005, and they just started in Tampa, Florida, and then they started in Washington, D.C. So they started more on the East Coast, mm-hmm. and they have about 100 franchisees throughout the U.S. and Canada then at this
and
point.
And how did you hear about the brand?
I just got on the internet and started looking. We were looking to do something a little bit different and started looking at different franchises, and this one rose to the top. I can never find anything negative about the company. It's just an overall incredible company with a lot of incredible ideas. Yeah.
So do you have the rights to all of the state of Idaho? What's your territory?
Our territory is actually, of course, Treasure Valley, Boise, Meridian, Nampa, Star, all of the surrounding area here. So that's our entire
territory. Do you see yourself branching into southern Idaho or northern Idaho?
Well, probably stick with here. I mean, this is actually more business here than what we can handle at this point. There's always potential, too, that Austin may, down the road, maybe want to go to another city. Maybe
start a branch, yeah.
That's a possibility down the road we may explore.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So, Austin, what have you found as some of the benefits of being a part of a network of franchisees?
Well, I think it comes down to trial and error. So they found out what worked and what didn't. And I think the most important thing that they found out is our trucks, our marketing. You know, they're big and flashy and orange and green. So just a matter of them finding out the real solutions and what works, and then we're just able to implement them very simply. So,
do you all have conferences that you go to? Do you get to have peer review with other franchisees?
Yeah, we do get to communicate some with other franchisees and get some feedback between each other.
How regularly are you engaged with the network?
Oh, the support's incredible. Actually, I have a close friend in Grand Rapids that just opened a few months ago. So basically, when I hit anything I'm not sure about, I can call him, and he can kind of tell me, you know, a potential solution to the problem. And then, of course, we have all of the people in Tampa that help us mm-hmm. out. And we do, every January, we do go to Tampa for, it's called the reunion. Yeah. Basically, all the franchisees come into town, and we have, of course, some meetings and just kind of go through business and everything. So the support's really incredible.
Awesome.
Just not on your own. There's a lot of support. You can always reach out to someone if you have a question or something. You're
do you have
about.
A designated coach or mentor within the network?
Yeah, so I have a designated ramp-up coach, and then I'll switch to another gentleman once we get completely up and running. But, yeah, there's support. Whatever question you have or any concern you have, you can always reach out to someone very easily.
Does your home office take care of billing, or are you pretty autonomous here?
So we actually handle the billing here, but we have software. It's actually called Hunkware that will handle the billing for us. We just have to input the information then for it. So, yeah.
So what advice would you give to somebody who's starting up? You've been doing this a little bit. You've probably learned some things that you would do different.
My advice would be do your research, of course. You never know enough. And hard work is really the key, I think, to about anything in life. If you can put the work in, have the passion, I mean, you're going to do well.
Yeah.
You'll do well. Yeah.
And so hard work, I'm guessing, did you know you signed up to be a mover?
Well, yes and no. The last few days we've been pretty involved in the business. You never really know what each day is going to bring you.
Right.
So I'm participating in the moves some days and some days I'm not. So it's just, as a small business owner, you know, you just have to kind of go with the flow with whatever's going to happen.
And you wear
day.
Your protective gear. So you're back. What do they call it?
Well, actually I don't, but try to be careful.
Wow.
Though,
you're supposed to lead by example.
Yeah.
You let him get away with that? Austin?
Yeah, I guess so.
Do you wear yours?
No, I don't really have to since I'm still a young guy, I guess.
Wow. So. We need to have a safety class for you all. I own a remodeling company, and I've seen what happens when you neglect some of those simple things.
Right.
And now that I'm old and neglected all those when I was your age, I regret it. So what other thoughts do you have, Austin? If you were giving someone some advice on being an entrepreneur, moving into a new area, starting all over, what would you say they should work on? What's the priorities?
I would say having clear focus and intent of what customers you're looking for and trying to get the proper exposure. One of the biggest problems that I think that we have is just being known for being a more professional service. Mm. And some of the customers are more adverse to our pricing. And if they knew more about our business and how professional and stress-free we actually are, then they won't, you know, be as adverse
the
to
cost
the
isn't
cost
as
of
much
the business.
Of an issue.
Yes.
So what do you think does set your firm apart from other movers?
Being uniformed, having brand new trucks, having a set system, you know, having the proper paperwork, being licensed and insured, just our whole intent and having younger, friendly guys that have goals in the future. They're more motivated and responsible to fulfill the job.
Great business model. That's awesome. And you guys have had, I would guess, surprising success.
We have. It's right? It's been incredible how fast it's taken off. You know, we're part of a very, very strong company, the College Hunks Company, and it's taken off. We can't believe how quickly it's taken off here.
You've already gotten, what, 10 five-star reviews?
Exactly. Exactly.
Tell us a little bit about how you've managed that quick ramp-up.
Well, our biggest thing, you know, no one's perfect. We made a couple mistakes. Honestly, on one of our first moves, something kind of went wrong. But the thing we did, there was a piece of furniture that ended up getting damaged. The thing we did, I went and bought the materials to fix it within 2 hours. So mm-hmm. I had it fixed within 2 hours. I think a lot of movers may have done something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But our whole thing is we're going to take very, very good care of the customer and, you know, not make those mistakes. If something does not quite go right, we're going to take care of the customer. And that gentleman, we turned that negative into a huge positive. He left a very long review for us. He was very happy with us. So we have that very high level of customer service where we're going to take care of
them. Yeah, the test of a company is not that you make no mistakes, but how you handle them.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So give your contact information in case there's someone listening who'd like to reach out and have a conversation with you, or maybe they've got some moving they need done.
Yeah, so just feel free to give us a call. So my direct number is 208-859-3010. So just feel free to give us a call for any, you know, junk removal, moving, even if you need a pod or U-Haul unloaded or loaded. We can do pretty much anything you need taken care of. And 70% of our items are actually donated or recycled also that we pick up to remove. So we're more than just picking up items.
Oh, really? Oh, good. Mm-hmm. So and you can also reach them at collegehunks.com.
Exactly. Collegehunks.com.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Austin, great to have you on the show. Scott, thank you for being here. I'm Jim Stevens. This has been Entrepreneur Radio. If you would like to be on the show or know somebody that would be a good candidate for this show, give me a call at 208-429-9275. We'll have you come into our studio here in our office and give you an opportunity to tell your story. We will return just after this. So far, I've been speaking with Tom Neeson. Tom is from Texas. Where in Texas are you from, Tom?
Dallas, Fort Worth.
I spent time down there. One of the conditions of marrying my wife was her father required me to go to Christ for the Nations Bible School. So that was the dowry, which is down there in Oak Cliff.
Yeah, right.
So Tom and I have been talking about call centers the Sandler way, and Tom has built a business around helping companies get out of their comfort zone and embrace proactive prospecting using a telephone. And we're talking about our mental reluctance to make those cold calls is really a condition that all of us have. You don't have to like prospecting. You just have to do it. And Tom was sharing how using a phone to prospect can be far more efficient than just feet on the street. So, Tom, you mentioned using a list and building a list. What do you recommend to listeners if they're in that position where, gee, I think I need to know who should I call? Because the first thing, if I don't have anybody to call, I'll never pick up the phone.
Yeah, I think in today's world, it's so easy to get a list. So either Google or Yahoo or just go on and do a search for this type of company. You'll get thousands of names. But there is also like Hoover's, InfoUSA, and a couple other list sellers where you can go on and you can just name them what I want. I want companies this size that do this. And let's say you want to talk to only head of operations. So you want the title of head of operations located in this geographic area. So many people, so many sales, a certain volume. You can say all these parameters and say, how many names you got? And they might sit there and say, we got 1,500 names. We got 1,000 names. And then you can buy that list as it is. So there's a lot of different options out there in today's world. The more, there's some companies that can give you a lot of information. We use one called BusinessWise. They're only, I think, in Texas and Atlanta and one other place. But that's kind of unique. There's a couple others like it. I can't tell throughout all the U.S., but you can press one button. Like, I can drive by a building and I can press the address of that building and it'll tell me everybody in that building. Hmm. There's a lot of, in today's world, a lot of places to get that information.
Tom recently did a talk at one of our conferences. And in that talk, Tom, you went through some of the mechanics of creating a dynamic environment for calling. So help us paint the picture for maybe I only have a couple of salespeople, or maybe I have a whole team of people. What kind of environment do I need to make sure we're successful in our prospecting activities?
Well, I think number one, you've got to have a strong culture. And the culture to me is number one with any company, but it's even stronger in a call center. And you know you have a good culture. You know you have a strong culture if people walk up to you and say, I don't want to work here, or I love it here. I really like energy. That tells me you have a culture that, number one, hopefully you know. By the way, if you don't know what your culture is, you have a culture and you probably won't like it when you find out what it is. It's what people say and do behind your back. The visible set of attitudes and behaviors that control your company. And I always say that the number one job of a CEO, number one job of a sales leader is culture. Forget everything else. You got to control the culture as to what's going on. And so to that end, if we think about sales and we think about our culture in the sales department, well, we want a culture of activity, a culture of feeling accomplished, a culture of fun, because prospecting isn't fun, a culture of winning. So to me, if I had 3 salespeople, 4 salespeople, or if I had 200, the first thing is the room, the environment you create. And the first thing I would get rid of, all cubicles, all barriers for me seeing everybody. Now think about this. Let's just take behavior attitude technique. I'm trying to induce a behavior, which is a behavior that most of us don't like, prospecting, getting on the phone, calling people. If I can sit in a cubicle by myself, I can pick up the phone, call somebody, hang up the phone. Oh, maybe add them into my CRM, maybe do some stuff, go get another cup of coffee, and then pick up the phone again. Right? And so 1 hour of cold calling means I called 10 people. But if we have an open environment, everybody can see everybody, and we have one huge, massive table. And by the way, Jim, I have several companies we go into where we do have a table, monster table, long table that seats anywhere from 20 to 40 people with their computers, and they're looking right across from one another. Huh. Now think of this, the same environment, same company, same everything, no cubicle. I'm sitting across from somebody that's on the phone. I'm sitting next to 2 people doing the same thing I am on the phone. I hang up that phone and everybody else is on the phone. What do you think I'm going to do?
I'm going to get back on the phone.
I'm going to get back on the phone. Everybody else is on the phone. I got to get back on the phone.
Yeah.
That behavior around me induces me to keep that behavior going. Now, we'll take it a step further. The rules we put in, really, this is just Chandler techniques, once again, compressed, is once you make contact with somebody while you're on the phone, you must stand up. Now, there's a couple things that does. We know is what our body language comes across the phone. Well, if I stand up and I've got a headset on, I stand up and I start moving and talking, much more energy on that call,
right?
I feel better about it. You know, I always say if people normally sitting in a desk doing cold calls, hunched over,
right?
It's the same thing you have at a funeral, okay? Not good for trying to sell somebody something. But if I'm standing up, right, drive some energy. And so I can just be walking around in my little area, but I'm talking to someone. Now take that same concept, right? I'm sitting down. I just hung up the phone, and there are people standing up and down around me at the table, and I have not stood up in the last 15 minutes. Guess what I'm going to fight to do?
I want to stand up. That's right.
So we think about the bat triangle. Angle and behavior, how do we induce that behavior? Well, number one, a little competitive fun, but there's benefits that drives energy into my phone call. So that to me is number one when you're talking about a call center, is how do we create that environment where people want to get on the phone, If you think about the culture from there, then we've got to have a lot of noise. So people always talk to me about, well, I don't want it to be loud. I want it to be loud. I want everybody to hear things going on. With today's technology and phone service, I can have silencing on the phone, where you don't hear a lot someone calling or calling in. But I want a lot of energy going on room. So I believe in bullhorns. Every manager needs to have a bullhorn.
Wow.
And when Jim has made his fourth appointment and he's number one in the first quarter of the morning, that's bullhorned out. All right, Jim just closed his fourth appointment for next week. Everything is measured, how many dials you make, what's your average talk time. It's all measured, and it's constantly announced. We also have big screen TV contests, all right? Starbucks gift card. First person to make a contact today via the phone gets a $5 Starbucks gift card. And it goes on all day.
Yeah.
TV, every week, a TV or something's given away if certain numbers are hit. There's always contests, energy going on. So now you think about that environment and the energy I drive. People can walk in that room and go, ooh, I don't like this. I don't want to be part of this. Great, get out. We don't want you. Or they're going to sit there and say, hey, this is fun. It's a lot better, more fun than the last call center I worked at.
Right.
So that's what I mean by culture and environment. It drives the whole call center.
My guest today is Tom Neeson. Tom, give your contact information. He's the author of the book, Call Centers, The Sandler Way.
Yeah, my contact is tom@salesmadeeasy.com. Website is salesmadeeasy.com, and it's 972-960-8695.
I'm Idaho's CEO of Sandler Training, Jim Stevens. If you like this show and want to subscribe to our content, email us at crossroads@sandler.com, crossroads@sandler.com, or reach out and ask how to subscribe at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, where we find power in reinforcement. The myth about communication is that we think it happened. Your success in business and personal life is determined in a very large part by how well you interact with others. Your ability to effectively relate, communicate, influence, and motivate others is a crucial skill required to succeed. Are you tired that people can't hear what you say because of how you say it? Are you frustrated that you try hard to make people feel more comfortable and it's not working? Are you concerned that this is getting in the way of your ability to foster and maintain relationships on both a personal and professional level? Hi, this is Jim Stevens, and I'll be hosting a class on how to effectively communicate August 29th, 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock p.m. at the Sandler Training Center off of Meridian Road exit and I-84. Call 208-429-9275 and ask about taking your extended disc personal analysis in preparation for the August 29th workshop. 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Tom, so far we've talked about the conceptual, but I'd like to get into some of the technical side of what you're training. I don't suppose you'd be able to walk me through perhaps what does the technical execution of a call look like? Talk to us about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the biggest thing, but once again, I'm going to tell you that we've taken Sandler and a call center, you got to compress it. And so what I mean by that is if we look at the technique part, we're really looking at scripts, very, very big in scripts. In fact, me in call centers, you must have scripts and you must know where you're going. So even if you're selling, we've got people selling $150,000, $250,000 items in call centers. And I think that's a big thing, Jim, is people think, well, the call centers is just to sell $50 items or $100 items. We have people selling really $250,000, $500,000, $50,000, $20,000 items, services and or products. So to me, if I got you on that phone and you're a COO or a CEO or a head of human resource of a large company, it's vital that I take that time and convert that into an appointment, a demo, whatever it might be. We only have a few seconds to do this. We don't have a lot of time. I'm not sure who had said that it takes 7 seconds to make that first impression.
Mm-hmm.
Why scripts are so important in our line is when we hire people, they have a script and they must use that script verbatim, at least for the first year, or if they're blowing their number out of the water for 3 months in a row, they can change it. Okay? But you'll often find is once they change it, their numbers go down. Right? Because in the script, we do have how to build rapport within a few seconds, right? That's there. How to set that upfront contract. But more so, we give people the option. So let's say it's an incoming call. Let's say you're looking at a software. You're the head of IT of a company and you saw a software on the website or whatever. You have an incoming call. So how do we make that call turn into something worthwhile?
Mm.
One of the things would be how we answer the phone. So it might be answering the phone and saying, hey, Jim, this is Tom with IT software. Hey, what made you call today? Now, we found is that what made you call today way is a huge difference than anything else, because it's an open-ended question and you're going about to tell me the pain point or the tip of pain.
Right.
But any other way we've opened that question from inbound calls has gotten stuff like, what's your price on this? What's this? What's that? So in call centers, you really want to measure, you create these scripts and you start measuring. What's the average talk time? By the way, that's good or bad. So average talk time in some people might be 3 minutes. You got to keep somebody on the phone for 3 minutes or more. So we have a script set to do that. Might be 3 minutes or less. So you got to track that and understand that so that when I got you and you work for me and you're doing a great job making the calls, connecting with people, but you're only keeping people on the phone for 2 minutes, I got to work with you on how to extend that conversation. Mm-hmm. I'll give you better questions after the script is over. So to me, one of the biggest things about call centers is sales management. Got to be a great, great, great coach, and always coaching in the moment. You don't sit there and coach once a week. A good manager is walking up and down the aisle and coaching when they hear stuff. So that's constant. But some of the techniques, what made you call today? Now, typically, there's one or two answers that you're going to give me. In our scripts on a computer screen, you actually have which way they're going. So what made you call today? Just interested in this. It then comes down to, it could be just interested in ABC, or I'm having a problem with, right? I want to know if this fixes a problem. Two different angles, both up on your computer screen. One says, just really kicking around so for information. We now have, would you like information on this or this? So that's your next part, your next question, right? If it's, I want to see if this solves this, there's two questions that you're supposed to ask. So we're constantly giving them, they're being fed a script that they must follow down this web and keep going. And it'll lead us to either pain, enough pain to get an appointment, or lead us to a no. And that's the goal, because if it's a no and they're just kicking tires because they bought something else, we want them off the phone so that I can make another phone call.
Right.
It's vital that we, one, make the script. If someone doesn't, if nothing else, call your local Sandler guy, because they can give you and they can help you with scripts. And scripts that, number one, I create rapport with an instant. Then I get easy upfront contract that might not be the full thing we're used to in a very first call, but it's good enough to get a 3-minute conversation. And then going after pain. How do we find what questions are going to give me pain or get me to a no very fast? So you see, Jim, as I thought, it's really a compressed cycle.
Yes.
As opposed to having 3 meetings with someone, this can be done with 1 phone call. And maybe that's just to get an appointment, mm-hmm. not a sale. But I'm compressing the system, making it work fast, so I can get the next appointment. That makes some sense?
It does. And I think mentally you have to give yourself permission to get someone to tell you no. And I think that's a big shift for a lot of salespeople. If you don't want to hear no, then you don't encourage people to tell you no. So what does that sound like, Tom? How do I get somebody to say, you know, I guess I'm really not interested?
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing is you really want to get to the pain points of you don't want someone to say I'm not interested. You want to tell them they're not interested. And I think that's the biggest thing of what we call negative reversing or going for the no is, since my livelihood, and by the way, some of these sales people make $250,000 in sales just on the phone. One of the things they're doing is hearing things. And once you get good at it, you start hearing things and then you start calling it. And that might sound like, from what I've heard so far, I don't know that spending this kind of money on your problem is worth it to you.
Nice.
So you're asking them. So basically you must, if my product and their service is a $25,000, right? Big money. And you're sitting there on the phone, I'm just kicking tires, just kind of looking at different things. And you won't give me anything else, then I'm definitely going to take this to no. Doesn't sound like it's a fit. I should probably just go away. Interesting, I had this happen to me just the other day where someone called me, left me a voicemail, and it was head of training of some large corporation, had like 250 salespeople. And so I'm actually asking this person questions and I'm getting one word responses, right? Yes, no, can't get anything out of this person. And so I finally said to her, I get the feeling that right now I'm probably not in the top 3 of your pick. And she said, no, but the CEO knows you or knows of you or knows you, worked with you before, and wanted me to get your prices. And at that point, I said, well, I got to be honest. Doesn't sound like you like me. Doesn't sound like we're going to be a fit. Plus, we're going to be expensive. How about if I just don't even send you a quote? And she goes, well, I need a quote. I said, okay, fair enough. I'll send you a quote. And then I never sent her anything, right? Because I figured I'm not going to waste my time.
Right.
2 weeks later, she called me and said, the CEO would like to set up a meeting with you and me and him. So I took it to no, because I didn't want to send her anything, because my feeling was, if I did, waste of my time, and number two, you'd use it against me.
Right.
So why bother?
That's awesome. So Tom, you shared an inbound call. What would an outbound call sound like? What is that initial, how do I catch their attention, and then how do I find out if they have any issues I can help with?
So an outbound call is very similar. It's very similar to our 30-second commercial. We've got to have a strong pattern interrupt in the beginning, okay? That strong pattern interrupt could be, hey, I'm just looking for help. You're probably the wrong person to talk to. If I give you 30, if I tell you what I do, can you transfer me to the right person?
Nice.
Now, our goal, depending who we're talking to, we're trying to get that person's now on the phone going, good, I can get off the phone with you.
Right.
That's the first thing we want to do is, hey, you're probably the wrong person to talk to. Can I tell you, take 10 seconds, tell you what I do, and then you can tell me who I should talk to. And the goal at that point is them sitting there going, yes, great. Typically, when we work with people, they're experienced this, this, or this. Any one of those bother you or your company? So if it's an outbound call, they say kind of yes, any positive thing, we then go down another script. If they go no, then we go down a different script, and that no might be great. So do you know if anybody in your company ever experienced that? You know, if there's somebody I should call in your company, I'm looking for referrals inside the company.
Yes.
So either one of those going, I want to keep you on the phone for 3 minutes. So if you say no, I say, great, do you know who in your company might be involved in that? And you say, Bob. Okay, so, and Bob is who? And so what would be the first thing I want to talk to Bob about? And so we have a script trying to get a little more information from you.
Hmm.
But as I said, these things are things you want to track and measure, such as, you know, we always want to call in decision makers, right?
Right.
Found that sometimes that's not true. We have one company that sells it's the cheapest one they have. Software package is probably $30,000, up to $250,000. And they always, who do you want to call on it? CIO, CEO, CFO. But we found it extremely difficult to get through, extremely difficult to get them time. So we started calling on the IT and analysis people, people to do the analysis that would use the software, the users.
Mm.
Our goal was to call them, get them in enough pain to set up a meeting with their boss, get them in enough pain to set up a meeting with the big guy or big lady.
Right.
Right. So that was our goal. So we changed it instead of going for the higher up, going down here, lower end, the end user, getting them in enough pain that we can set up a demo with their boss, getting that enough pain to set up a demo with their boss.
My guest today has been Tom Neeson. Tom, tell us one last time, how would you like to be contacted?
Oh, best way to get a hold of us is tom@salesmadeeasy.com. Our website is salesmadeeasy.com.
This is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. My calling is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. Are you tired of forgiving your employees for not trying? Are you bored with the daily rituals of at least and just enough that tend to haunt you over the weekend? Are you ready to test yourself and see if you could do it? Are you ready to test your team? Call us at 208-429-9275. Ask to set up a discovery meeting and we'll set up a conversation. This is Sandler Training, where we find power in reinforcement. Welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm with Sandler trainer Tom Neeson. Now, Tom, Sandler is really a trial of ongoing reinforcement and commitment. I'd like you to walk us through some of the frustrations, concerns, and challenges that you've seen, perhaps even you have had in your life and you see that your clients have. And let's talk a little bit about the importance of management. I think too often the manager and their role is often overlooked.
That's so true. You know, especially, once again, I keep going back to call centers, but this is true anywhere. That whole role really compresses and changes even more. But let's take a look at managers as a whole. There are four levels or four roles that at Sandler we basically say you got to play as a sales manager, sales leader. One is supervisor, two is a trainer, three is a coach, four is a mentor. And it's pretty easy if you think about how I transition people in and out of those roles. One is, if I hired you and you're brand new, I'm going to be a supervisor, right? It's just going to be, hey, this is what you do, when you do it, how you do it, and don't deviate from it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a supervisor's job is, telling you when and where and how. It's pretty simple when you're brand new and just hired because you're in love. We're in the honeymoon stage, right? And so I'll do whatever you want, boss. And then we transition them maybe after 3-4 months to becoming a trainer. Now, a trainer still tells you what to do, but they give you pats on the back, right? A trainer will sit there and say, try the call this way. Hey, that was pretty good. Now try it this way. Now do this. And they give you little reinforcement. Positive reinforcement goes a long way. And if we think traditionally, why would you do that after 3-4 months? Well, the guy's been working with you for 3-4 months. He's seen your pimples. He's seen you're not perfect. You don't ship everything on time and not everything's right.
Right.
So I've got to give you a little hug now on that, right? But then at some point we transition you over to coach. Well, I've trained you a lot and now I don't need to train you anymore. You've been with me a year. You should know how to do it. And so now I just got a good coach. We think about what a coach does. If it's on the field, they don't get in the field with you. They're on the sideline and they're supposed to pull 110% out of you during game day.
Right. Right?
That's what a coach does. And by the way, it's Sunday. I don't have time to train you. If you don't know it, you don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, David Chandler's, one of David Chandler's funny quotes was when he was playing golf and he had a big tournament with his pro, head pro, he got there an hour and a half early and started hitting golf balls and trying different shots. And he said his golf pro came up to him and said, "Hey, Chandler, how you doing?" He dropped one or two balls, hit them, and started walking away. And David Chandler said to him, "Hey, pro, this is a big tournament. Aren't you going to practice?" And the pro said, "If you didn't bring it with you, you ain't going to find it here." And the truth of that matter is a good coach doesn't need to be in the game with you. But, boy, if you don't have it with you, you shouldn't be playing the game.
Right.
And I find is a lot of sales managers think they're coaching when really they're just training. Mm. Try it this way. Do this. Heck, if you've been with me for a year and a half, Jim, I shouldn't be telling you how to do it again. You should know it. I should already be able to pull it out of you and coach you. And I think that's a big mistake. People mistake coaching for actually training and retraining and retraining and retraining. And by the way, your salesperson, I'm not going to listen to all that. The salesperson at some point goes, yeah, I'll try it that way, and never do it.
Then never do it.
Then maybe transfer them up to mentor. Some people, not all of them, but there might be one or two people that I see something in that I can mentor them somewhere else. But here's the thing I think that almost everybody misses, and because I think it is to sales managers what prospecting is to salespeople, and that is supervising. Because what does a supervisor do? They're great at data and process. A good supervisor gets data, knows where to get the data, takes the data, analyzes the data, and creates process. That's what a supervisor does. And if we're not doing that, and if we don't have processes in place, and we don't have data such as our cookbook gives us, then there's no way anybody can ever train or coach somebody. Hmm. If I tried to coach a football team like a lot of managers try to coach a sales team, that would mean get on the field with my team and go, okay, there's the field, go get them.
Right.
And my team going, which way should we go? Oh, don't worry about it, just go. And then my team might say, what are those white lines? Don't worry about the white lines, that's just for some measurement or something. Just go. If you don't have that process, and so I think a lot of managers don't want to put that in place and will not hold people accountable. Now translate that back to a call center. In a call center, that is a must because we have so many things we're measuring that we have the process. And if someone deviates from the process, I need to get them in the process or out the door. Mm. And so for me, that's one of the biggest things that I think a lot of us mistake is unless you have data I can pull from, unless I have a process that I can follow and everybody understands, you cannot coach anybody anything. I think that's the biggest problem I see.
And I know for me, I don't like supervising. It's too manual. It's too tactical. And because of that, I do a poor job of it. But you brought up a terrific point, and that is you got to measure. What you measure, you'll manage. So talk to us a little bit about what are some of the things that a salesperson or a manager should be having their people track, and what are the mechanics of tracking?
Oh, that's a good point. You know, and if you think about what should they track and how do you track it, you can do it with CRM, but here's what I really want you to think about. There's three things that we should track. Behaviors, leading indicators, lagging indicators. And I'm taking this from manufacturing. A lagging indicator is history. It is how much you produce today. In a world of sales, it's how much did you sell. Well, basically that is history and there's not much I can do about it. But there are leading indicators that create a lagging indicator. Leading indicators meaning how many proposals you did, how many demos you did, how many times you met with this level of person, how many second appointments you went on, how many third appointments you went on, depending on your sales cycle. Then there are behaviors. Behaviors create leading indicators. Behaviors might be how many dials did you make? How many people did you talk to? How many emails did you send out? How many direct mail pieces did you send out? How many follow-up calls to customers did you make? How many service calls to customers? How many times you asked for a referral? So to that point is sometimes we get into it, we're like, oh, yeah, this makes sense, and we measure how many dials you make. Mm. You've got to measure everything. Because if you're only measuring one thing, when one measurement becomes a goal, it becomes a bad measurement, right? Because if how many dials I make is the only thing you judge me on, boss, then guess what? I can make 1,000 dials and I'll make sure I dial people that won't answer the phone.
Right.
You know, if you think about it, maybe someone listening to the show might have in their head going to the salespeople and asking the same question over, such as how many quotes you do this week? So if I worked for somebody and the boss kept coming up, how many quotes you do this week? How many quotes you do this week? And that's one measurement, one leading indicator, a good measurement, but only one. And you kept asking me that. When I get in front of a prospect and the prospect says, listen, I'm buying from my brother. I go, yeah, but can I quote you anyways?
Right.
right? Because that's what I'm measured on.
Yeah.
So there's things that we need to measure, not just one behavior, not just one leading indicator. We need to measure what types of those, how many in each one, and how many lagging indicators come from that. And then you can make some changes, and then you can improve your process. Then you can be a great coach.
My guest today is Tom Neeson. Tom is the author of the book, Call Centers, The Sandler Way. And Tom, give a brief overview of what's included in your book. Why should somebody go on Amazon and buy one of your books today?
Well, the book is for two people, for anybody with a call center or somebody that's thinking about a call center. You know, in today's world, the outside sales rep is diminishing. People don't need as many outside sales calls as they did in the past. If I want to buy some new product or something, I can go out and do all the research in the world before I call you. As a matter of fact, in the old days, I called five salespeople and got info. Now I go to the web and maybe I single out two people and get info, and now I just get those two people in. So most of the time, salespeople today are entering the sales process when 60% of the sale is done. So the phone can be a much more important world with no matter what you're selling. And so our book kind of covers, number one, the type of salespeople that would be great at call centers. By the way, they're different than your normal salespeople. It is the person that wants to be done at 9 to 5, believe it or not. Yeah. They make great salespeople. They can be 9 to 5 and go pick up their kids. Still great salespeople. It might be that person that has tattoos all over his face, great on the phone, but doesn't want to see anybody. Mm. So it could be that lady that's 55 years old with pink hair on spikes that would love to make a lot of money, but not necessarily want to get in front of people. So this book kind of takes what type of people make a good call center, how do you hire them? And number two, the processes the supervisor must create, how to coach those processes, and how to create that culture and environment for a call center. So wrap that all in, and I think if you have a call center, you might find a nugget in there that'll help you. And if you're thinking about it, it'll tell you what you have to do to build one.
Awesome. So give your contact information, Tom.
It's tom@salesmadeeasy.com, or our website is salesmadeeasy.com.
Thank you so much, listeners, for inviting us into your world. I'm Jim Stevens, and my calling is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. If they're trapped in a comfort zone and frustrated because they're living with just good enough, ready to accept chaos and volatility in daily business and customer relationships, prone to learning the hard way through trial and error, hoping eventually you'll figure it out. If you're ready to give up the insanity of repetition, call me at 208-429-9275. We'll set up a discovery meeting where we can have a conversation and find out if there's any reason for us to pursue a relationship. That number one more time, 208-429-9275. Have a great weekend, and remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it.
The preceding program was sponsored by Sandler Training.